And Kantorowicz has Chops Ahoy.
Yes, he does.
He comes there, and he's a guy who Blazer can learn something from.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell us about him.
He's an historian. So he was one of the junior members of the Stefan George Circle, one of the last to be brought in under the wing of Gundolf, Friedrich Gundolf, who was one of George's favorites for a time, brought in Ernst Kanebrowicz. So I guess just maybe to quickly say that the Stefan George Circle was active in the early decades of the 20th century in Germany, mm-hmm. up until about the time the fascists took power. They were interested in Stefan George, but he was in some ways more fascist than they were. He scorned them as ignoramuses. Anyway, it was an elitist circle of German intellectuals, mostly historians. And Stefan George would give them assignments, you know, you go off and write a book on Frederick the Great. And so that's what Gundolf had to do. He had to write on Frederick the Great. And they were sort of under his direction. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, very intelligent, gay men. So I know that, I think it was Marie Damon in Darkness at the Edge of Town who mentioned the, you know, Spicer cries, like a kind of analogy with the George cries, George Circle. So that, Kanebrowicz was just, you know, he was, I don't know, the French word comes to my mind, it's attirant. He was very, he attracted. He was charismatic, mm-hmm. Very aristocratic in his manners, and he lectured on political philosophy. His area was medieval political philosophy, and he did the great big, you know, the King's Two Bodies, right? That was the material that he was lecturing on in Berkeley when Robert Duncan and Blazer and Spicer were all sitting in a row in his classes. So the King's Two Bodies, the premise of that is that you have a role. The king is a position, it's a office, a high office. As an office, as a concept, is that the right word? I'm not sure it is, but it is beyond reproach. The king's power is absolute, but the person who fills that role is not. The person who is allowed to sit on the crown is called to that office, right? Has to somehow live up to the office, and is fallible and is human. So that's the king's two bodies. The one is divinely sanctioned, divine right of kings. The other is just a man who must attempt to carry out that office on earth as best as he, maybe she in some cases, can do. So that was Kanebrowicz's theory, or his thesis, main thesis of that book. So it's an incarnational thesis, right?
And when the McCarthy era hits and he has to sign a pledge, he says no thanks.
He says no thanks.
And he's off to Princeton.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So that gives you a sense of a little bit of, I mean, that says a lot of who he was.
Yeah, yeah. I think that having escaped the Nazis, he
had his fill.
he had enough of that. He was, now I have to be careful, especially what I say on tape here, because I might have my facts wrong, but I think it was Kanebrowicz who was let off. The Nazis didn't come after him because they wanted to get all the Jews out of the universities, right? But if a professor had served in the First World War, they were gonna, you know,
Cut him some slack.
But I'm trying to remember whether it was Gundolf or whether Gundolf would be the elder, or whether it was Kanebrowicz himself who had done the service. At any rate, at some point, Kanebrowicz had to get out.
Right.
Because they were getting to be a, yeah.
So when we look at the Berkeley Renaissance and we look at Spicer and Duncan and Blazer, there's a great letter Jack Spicer wrote to Robert Duncan, and he said that for him, Spicer, the king of the world is evil.
Yes.
For Duncan, the king of the world is himself, Duncan. Yes. which we'll probably get into as we go along. And for Blazer, the king is Christ.
Yes.
Well, it was in 1944, 45, or whenever he wrote that letter.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that's partly explicable through Kantorowicz. So if the king of the world is yourself, then what you've done, and this would be the source of some of the poetics arguments between Robin and Duncan and Spicer, you've collapsed the two bodies of the king. You say, I am the king, I am the poet, right? But if, by analogy, the office of poet with a capital P is different than you little guy over there writing a verse, right?
Right. You know? The scribbler in the cafe.
Yeah, the scribbler in the cafe and the poet. So that would be the way that the king's two bodies might get translated into poetic. So Spicer, in that letter, is saying, you know, he thinks he is the poet, the same thing as the poet, right? So the poet, he's made himself the king of the world, the little cross-eyed king of a thousand lines in, you know, the Venice poem. For Spicer, evil is the king of the world, because there is nothing that saves us. There's no transcendent realm that saves us from the poetry. Poetry can't save us from death. It can't save the beloved from age and from loss. Right? The world essentially, life lives on itself. It eats itself. Right? The Venice poem and the Apocalypse, Apocalypse and Three Voices that Spicer wrote, mm-hmm. those two poems, if you set them side by side, you see the difference. Mm-hmm. Because in the Duncan poem, at the end, poetry is what saves the poet from his distress at a lost love. Right? Spicer didn't like the poem. He thought it was inauthentic, because poetry doesn't save you. It doesn't save the feelings. It doesn't save the heart. It doesn't save the flesh. Right? Life eats itself. Life consumes itself. And love is always going to be disappointed and broken. Okay? So that's a very, you know, much more existentially oriented point of view than what Duncan would take. And with Robin, Christ, because of the incarnation. That is, it's not that you can merge yourself with some kind of high office. Like, if you want to bring this back, the language more into the 20th century, it would be the language itself. It's not that you can merge yourself with the word, right? But you perform the word. And in that performance, in that incarnation of the word, you not only register your own specificity in the way you perform, but you also are able to marry that, is that the right word, to the immortality of the word, right? So that, I don't think that's not as clear an explanation as I want to give it. I want to get the words a little bit tighter there. Mm-hmm. That If you perform the poet, okay, if you are the poet, that's a collapse of the transcendent and the material. If you reject the poet entirely, right, the word poet, the great with a capital P, if you reject it entirely and say, that's not going to save me, then you are left with the fluency of life and nothing else. Like, there is no art, because all art will simply, you know, it's a bit like Yeats's Golden Bird. It sings in Byzantium, but Spicer said, what about right here, now, right? We're not all going to Byzantium. And the Blazer way is to say, yes, the word is not myself. Right? It's a great abstraction from life. Art is not life. It is an abstraction. But I perform it. I perform it this way. And this way, in that way, when I step out, the dance, right? The movement of the word, the movement of the poem, when I step that out, my performance is distinctive, even if the words are not. And I am not the same thing as my words. I'm not the same thing as poet. I perform poet this way. Is that?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But it also gives us a sense of the three personalities we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And you can tell, I mean, one of the things I wanted to say when you're talking about Spicer is, well, so you might as well drink. What's the use?
Well,
and he dies at 40.
Okay, that it takes a lot of work to drink yourself to death at 40. The human body is an amazing thing. If you have to drink really hard. You know, Ellen Tolman told me that too, that when they were in university, everybody drank. It was post-war. Everybody smoked. Everybody drank. But she said, Jack always drank more than most. He was always, you know, the last one at the bottle kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Right? So what does Spicer achieve with that? It is a death-defying or death-inviting maybe performance. Like, I can show you the difference between these words and me. I'm going to die. Words won't.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And my vocabulary did this to me.
Yeah.
And your love will
let you go on. That's what he said to Robin. Right. Everybody thinks those are maybe apocryphal. At least I've had some academics say, oh, Robin just made that up. But whether he did or didn't, it's not for me to say. You know, it's because I wasn't there. But it's very accurate to the poetics afoot. It's very accurate to his poetry and to Spicer's. Right? So love allows you to be the incarnation of, right? Allows you to take a lesser role, not to insist on an absolute authenticity or none whatsoever, right? I've always thought that Spicer performs absence in his poetry, because absence is what you can actually get of the material thing, the body itself, into the language. It's, you know, where are you? Where we are is in a sentence, he says, in textbook of poetry. But the pun on sentence as being kind of prison sentence, your prison house of language, you're trapped in there. And it's not really you, because the words aren't yours.
But it's the best we can do.
It's the best we can do. Right. And Robin's okay with that. Right. Spicer wasn't.